Welcome to the podcast, Amazing Tales from Off and On Connecticut's Beaten Path, and I'm your host, Mike Allen. This week on Amazing Tales CT, we're celebrating our 100th episode, and we're going to have a very special guest as a result. If you've been a regular listener to the podcast, you know that we've done several episodes on the great French general Rochambeau. He led 5,000 French troops to fight alongside the Continental Army in Yorktown, Virginia, winning the Revolutionary War for the new United States. Well, since he and his troops landed from France in Rhode Island, they had to march across and camp in Connecticut, and Generals Washington and Rochambeau held several meetings here as well. Well, today we hear from a direct descendant of the famous Rochambeau, Raphael de Gouberville. He's here to share his views on his ancestor, his views on the task that Rochambeau undertook, and what that historic period meant for French-American relations overall. Raphael will be along in a moment. This week's trivia question, 70 years ago, it ushered in an entirely new era in military prowess, as well as the use of nuclear power. We'll stick around after the main program for the answer, because then you'll know the topic for next week's show. Amazing Tales from Off and On Connecticut's Beaten Path is brought to you by our sponsor, Yale New Haven Health. Yale New Haven Hospital was the very first hospital in Connecticut. They opened their doors 200 years ago and later introduced the entire country to the use of penicillin and chemotherapy. Today, some of the brightest minds in medicine choose to work there, and it's the primary teaching hospital for the prestigious Yale School of Medicine. For more information, log on to ynhhs.org. That's ynhhs.org. To my regular listeners, I just want to pause for a moment and say a very special thank you. As we speak, we're in the month of July 2023, and two significant achievements are occurring this month. Earlier this month, over the 4th of July weekend, we logged the 100,000th time that one of the Amazing Tales CT episodes was downloaded for listening. And today's episode, well, it's our 100th episode, so we're celebrating that as well. And of course, none of this would have been possible without all of you, the listeners, continuing to check out episodes of Amazing Tales CT. And so I just want to say thank you. Well, moving on to today's episode, we have a truly special guest with us, Raphael de Gouberville, a direct descendant on his mother's side of the great French general Rochambeau. Now, for the uninitiated, when the Revolutionary War was underway in the 1700s and the Continental Army was battling the British, well, the outlook really wasn't all that good for the Americans. Financing for things like ammunition, food, soldiers' salaries, all of that in short supply. The British had a much stronger naval presence. And in general, the American side was in need of help. And that's when the French came in. It's no secret the French and the British despised each other for centuries over the course of European history. And when the French saw an opportunity to perhaps make life a little miserable for the British by helping the Americans, well, they decided to get involved. It was Rochambeau who was given the honor of helping the American cause, and he and his 5,000 troops sailed from France to Newport, Rhode Island, to see how they could help. Well, Connecticut played an outsized role in this chapter of history because Rochambeau met with the Continental General George Washington twice in Connecticut to plan the attack on the British. Then Rochambeau's troops, cannons, the horses, all the provisions, made their way across Connecticut to Westchester, New York, where the plan was to battle the British in New York City, which the British controlled at that point in time. Now, along the way, they camped in several Connecticut locations, and we've done episodes on this in the past. At Rochambeau's headquarters in Westchester, which was the Odell House in Hartsdale, which still stands, by the way, the major decision was made to bypass New York, where the British force outmanned the French and American troops combined, and instead march even further, all the way to Yorktown, Virginia, to battle the British there. Well, today that 700-mile route that Rochambeau and his troops took is being enshrined by the National Park Service as the W3R Trail, also known as the Washington-Rochambeau Revolutionary Route. Now, also a quick word on an organization you're going to hear mentioned in this episode, the Society of Cincinnati. No, it has nothing to do with Cincinnati, Ohio, although that's a pretty logical assumption. It's named after the ancient Roman hero Lucius Cincinnatus, who was an embodiment of civic virtue in the olden days of Rome. Well, that organization, the Society of Cincinnati, is the oldest American fraternal organization, started back by the Continental Army officers who were encamped at Newburgh, New York in 1783, which was the year the Revolutionary War ended. The group was designed to promote the ideals of the Revolution, help members and their families who were in need, and to advocate for compensation that had been promised to the officers by Congress. And the first president of this group was none other than George Washington himself, who would, of course, go on to become the nation's first president. Well, let's hear now from Rochambeau's direct descendant, Raphael de Gouberville. So, Raphael, tell me a little bit about yourself, what you do, and what you're doing here in the United States.
Well, Michael, I'm French, as you can tell with my accents. I'm not American. I've just moved in 6 months ago here in the U.S., in New York, more precisely. I came here for a job opportunity, but also a personal opportunity for me to live in a foreign country, especially in the U.S., and follow my family history in the U.S. Not in New York, because it's, to my knowledge, never visited New York, but I wanted to move to the U.S. for personal and professional objectives. So this is how I just arrived here. And I'm here for quite a long time, for 3 years at least. And I'll see in 3 years where I am. And if I want to stay longer, I'll see if I'm still welcome in this country, which I've been, yeah, I feel welcome so far. I hope it will last longer.
I must say that in 3 years, it'll be 2026, which will be the United States' 250th birthday. And so much of this attention is focused around, and I'll only do this once, your great-great-great-great-great-great-great-grandfather, the Comte de Rochambeau. I promise you I won't do that again, but we had to do it once. It's absolutely amazing what this single individual meant to American independence. And I'm, as you say, you're able to come back and sort of celebrate this. And I guess my one question is, have you had a chance to do any traveling around where he was when he was here?
Yes, actually, yes. I've been fortunate enough to visit the United States, or at least some part of the United States, several times already. So my first trip back in 2012, 10 years ago, I visited the very beginning of American history in my mind, or the modern American history, the United States, as I was actually acting as a reenactor at Mount Vernon, the house of George Washington, right next to Washington, D.C. So actually 10 years ago, I spent 3 months at Mount Vernon Estate, thanks to the Society of the Cincinnati, the oldest American patriotic association, created in 1783 by George Washington himself. So actually, I've started the very beginning of my love with America, with the very beginning of the presidency of America, was George Washington. And actually, I was portraying young Lafayette, not Rochambeau, but Lafayette, George Washington Lafayette, the son of the Marquis de Lafayette, who stayed at Mount Vernon. So this is the first place I visited that my ancestor, I would not go into my great-great-great grandfather, but my ancestor, Rochambeau, visited Mount Vernon actually in September of 1781, if I don't make a mistake, on his way down to Yorktown before the battle. He stopped at the Mount Vernon Estate, where he was welcomed by George Washington himself. So this is the first place I visited that my great-grandfather visited. And I also went to Yorktown, Virginia, to see the battlefield, of course. Also went to Colonial Williamsburg, which is a wonderful place to kind of imagine and live a bit the 18th century era. And more recently, I visited Odell House in the Westchester County, where Rochambeau used to stay in between July and August of 1781. It was his headquarters in the region when it was discussing with Washington whether they should attack the British in New York or whether they should attack them somewhere else, and then they decided to go down to Yorktown, Virginia. But so we stayed at Odell House. And finally, I've also been to, and this is the very beginning of Rochambeau stay in the U.S., I've been to Newport, Rhode Island, where Rochambeau arrived. And thanks to this trip, I've seen the fourth statue of Rochambeau, because you have one statue of Rochambeau in Newport, one in Lafayette Square, Washington, D.C. So two statues in the U.S. and two statues in France, one in Paris and one in Vendôme, where Rochambeau is from, where my family is from. So, yeah. So I've done a bit of the W3R, the Washington Rochambeau Revolutionary Route. And along the way, I've stopped to these different iconic places.
Now, what goes through your mind and your heart when you stop these places and realize that your ancestor came across this same area? Do you feel an affinity with the area where you are?
I do. And actually, I've grown up with this idea of Rochambeau. Back in the day, he was the general in charge of the French troops. You know, I grew up with this idea without really having to think about it, because I was in France. I grew up in France. We all talked about it in my family. But it was all about America that I'd never visited before 2012. And then when I arrived in 2012, going to these same places where my ancestor had been before, I kind of like started to realize what it was like first to imagine like these 5,000 French soldiers with their, you know, heavy material in the summer with the humidity around DC, especially that I've discovered during a summer as well. So my visits at these different places made me actually realize how amazing this trip from the French troop was. How amazing this adventure, because it was really an adventure back in the day, was. So it is thanks to my journeys here in the U.S. that I've really felt, you know, related to the country, related to this part of common history that we have together, France and America. So, yeah, it's really through these discoveries that I've started to realize and see how big this impact in the American history is, how big this page of history is, both to France and the U.S., of course.
It's very difficult sometimes to put this in the proper perspective, but I'm going to hazard a guess that when you came over for your work assignment that you flew over, whereas your ancestor took, if memory serves me right, close to 2 months on a ship from France to Newport, Rhode Island, you know, 6 weeks to 8 weeks, I think. Just that alone is a stark contrast to what we face today.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, nowadays it's very common and natural for people to travel abroad, to live abroad. But yeah, back in the 18th century, it was much more of an adventure. And especially when you were traveling for war, I came here for a job with no one threatening me. I'm not fighting for the freedom of the people who are free already today, the American people. But yeah, it's very impressive to realize that these men, not only my ancestor, because he was among many other guys. So I'd like to pay tribute to all these men, not only French, but also American, who dared to fight against the British and who dared to cross the Atlantic for the French troops without knowing what they would actually do on site, and meeting with Washington, deciding on a common strategy. All that was a mix of diplomacy, understanding each other, which was not easy because back in the days, I'm not sure many French people would speak English. Not even sure today it's the case, but back in the days, probably only Lafayette was able to speak proper English, a few other French people, but not much. So it was a huge bet on the French side to come to the U.S., accomplish this hard mission of getting along with Washington, fighting the British, winning against the British, which is, I mean, back in the days, the British Army, and still today, they're legendary. especially for the naval battles. But as I tend to think, French people would never refuse a war against its biggest enemy, England. I guess it was an extra motivation for France to try it and to actually gain influence, international influence, especially in power out of that, and also give freedom to the United States. But it's the contrast between the traveling conditions today and the traveling conditions back in the day is striking, is really impressive. And to realize that they have been walking, all the French troops have been walking down from Newport, Rhode Island, down to Yorktown, Virginia, which is, if I don't make a mistake, roughly 700 miles. So let's say 1,000 kilometers, because I speak in kilometers. When you realize that 1,000 kilometers is the distance pretty much between the very north of France and the very south, it's striking to realize that they could have like crossed the entire country for war, for another country, for the freedom of people of another country. It's very impressive in terms of dedication, in terms of commitment, and in terms of, yeah, adventure and courage itself, duty and courage. That's very impressive.
Today, we get tired just driving 700 miles.
Yes, exactly. We're really warriors and fighters, and they're, yeah, very brave. I mean, the body was put into pressure because of the weather conditions, which is weather condition here in the U.S. is way different from what we have in France, for example. It's much more humid here. So the gear that they had, the clothing was not adapted to the kind of conflict they were having here in the American continent. So thinking about all these different conditions and all these different factors, you realize how amazing and how a bit, I would say, reckless it was for them to just dare doing that. It's very impressive. And this you only realize when you do it, actually, when you travel in your fancy conditions. I mean, mine, for example, you're traveling with a plane, having a taxi driving you from the airport down to your place. And then you realize that these guys were doing it, you know, with horses for the more fortunate, with their feet for most of them. Wow, that's very striking. It gives it even more of an impressive vision of these troops and this men committed to this mission.
What is the view in France of Rochambeau's activities? Are the French proud of this? How's it taught in school? Is this a highlight of French history? Is this something like a footnote in French history? Are people looking at the United States maybe today with politics the way it is and saying, gee, I wish Rochambeau had never done that? How is that viewed in France today?
I could not speak for all the French people and, you know, education in general, but from my perspective, it's more of a footnote in the French history, this French-American war, the War of Independence, the Battle of Yorktown. It's more of an anecdote in the French history. I mean, the way they start school. One of the explanations I would have for that is because of the time when it happened. Because it's only my opinion, but I would assume that it's mainly due to the fact that it is very close to the major event of the end of the 18th century in France, which is the revolution. And it was such a big, important movement in France that changed it all from, you know, monarchy to republic. And it came with a lot of changes, with a lot of, you know, new ideas and new ways of thinking in France. So I think, unfortunately, and because the conflict was not in Europe, it was in the US. What I mean by the conflict is the American War of Independence. Because this page of history and this link with France and the US was taking place in the US, I think we have kind of like kept a very French vision of this period of history. And we are not, or when I was at school at least, we were not spending a lot of time on this part, on this episode of the French American history. And nowadays, I would say that people don't think about America as, you know, the country the French helped to be independent under the United States. What people might think about United States today is more about recent history, which is not less important at all. But what we think about the United States today as French people is more about they came to Normandy during the Second World War. And we tend to forget about the First World War, but actually during the First World War, I mean, the Americans arrived as well to help us, to save us. So we tend to emphasize the link we have, the more recent, history speaking, together, the French people, the American people, during the First and especially during the Second World War. So this is, you know, the short-term, unfortunately, a bit short-term vision that we have mostly in France of the French-American relationship, although it's a much longer relationship that we've had with the U.S., starting even before the war for the American independence. So yes, unfortunately, I would be very happy to tell you that Rochambeau is celebrated as a huge general, a major figure in France, but it's not the case. And the only person that is really known by everyone in France who took part to this conflict is Lafayette. But actually, Lafayette is not really renowned for his role in the U.S. and for the War of Independence. Lafayette is mostly known for his political life in France after the War of Independence when he came back to France. So this part of history is not really intensively taught at school. As you can imagine, I'm very sad about it. And I keep talking about this part of history that I think is crucial for both France and the United States.
Well, of course, there's only a slight difference in the history between France and the United States, right? So just a few more years on the France side. A question, you know, when I used to travel on business around the world, I would bring home some trinkets for the family and some gifts, and I'm sure you do the same. I've got to ask, did Rochambeau bring home anything that is still in the family in terms of artifacts from those days?
I'm sure he should have brought something, many things, I would say, from the United States. I mean, he stayed like something like 2 to 3 years during this war. So I'm sure he brought many things back home from the U.S. But apart from his memoir that we have that are currently at the National Archives in France, I would have to ask my parents to know more about that. But I'm not sure we have any artifacts of this very period of Rochambeau in the United States. What we have for us is the memory of our ancestor. And more importantly, and this is the best way for us to promote the life of our ancestor, we still live in our family house, the very house where Rochambeau used to live. And so we maintain this house, which is our way for us to, you know, convey the memory and pass along with the history of this gentleman and the common history he has with the French and American freedom.
Well, that wraps up this episode of Amazing Tales from Off and On Connecticut's Beaten Path. I really want to thank our guest for today's program for taking the time to be here, Raphael de Gouberville, whose great-great-great-great-great-great-great-grandfather, that's seven greats, was none other than the famous French military general Rochambeau himself. And my thanks to him for making the 100th episode of Amazing Tales CT so, well, amazing. The answer to this week's trivia question, the question was, 70 years ago, it ushered in an entirely new era in military prowess, as well as the use of nuclear power. Well, the answer, of course, the first ever nuclear submarine, the USS Nautilus, which is permanently docked in the waters of the Thames River off Groton, near the Electric Boat Shipyard where it was built and launched back in 1954. Next week, we're going to speak with the director of the Nautilus Museum about the incredible accomplishments of this now decommissioned underwater legend. Amazing Tales from Off and On Connecticut's Beaten Path is a production of True North Associates, LLC. This is Mike Allen. Be safe, and please stay healthy.